You're listening to TV Madness with your host, Makisha Madden-Toby. Here's the thing. We're doing some fun stuff this summer. It's summer, right? So this is TV Madness, and we're going mad. So I dug into my archives for a great interview I had with John Slattery. You know, it was one of those things where you do the interview, and you're like, okay, what am I going to do with this? The Mad Men season's over. But you know what? It was a good interview, and I love John Slattery. I was kind of disappointed he didn't get, as it were, a lot of critics, that he didn't get nominated for an Emmy. But he's fine. The 50-year-old actor, who is from Massachusetts, has bounced back. He's going to be on Arrested Development next year, and Mad Men comes back next year for a sixth season. And, of course, the show was nominated for Best Drama Nod, or Best Drama Series for the Emmys, so he'll be okay. But let's just go back to the show. Season 5 sort of had a mixed bag of reactions. Some people said it was the worst season of Mad Men. Some other people said it was the best. I'm sort of in the middle. I liked it. I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't have a problem with Megan, John's, or not John Hamm's wife, but yeah, Don's wife, new wife on the show. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought there was sort of, you know, there were some inconsistent episodes, but overall, I thought the season was fantastic, and I loved the finale. So let's check out this John Slattery interview he did with reporters during a roundtable just before the fifth season kicked off.
Well, I think the benefit of doing something that runs this long is that you get to sort of shine a light into certain corners that you wouldn't if it didn't go on, you know, if it didn't last this long. But I think, yeah, from the outset, it was very interestingly written and got progressively more so. You know, he's smart, he's funny, he's flawed, and he's all kinds of things. I mean, I think the good thing about all the characters in the show is just when you think you've got it pegged, the character will do something that belies all that. You know, if you think he's a complete womanizing asshole, he'll do something that's entirely human, you know. So yeah, I think this is probably the best. It's certainly the most complete character that I've had a chance to play, I think, because of that time.
What would Roger Sterling be doing if it weren't for Sterling Cooper Draper Price? What would he be without it?
He'd probably be in business somewhere, given the contacts and the people that he grew up in and around. I don't think he necessarily wanted to go. I mean, he says at one point, you know, you were off doing whatever you're doing to this woman who broke his heart years before. That, you know, you were off doing what you were doing, and I got out of the war, and I took off my uniform, put on a suit like a lot of people did, and went to work. And went to work in the family business, and then slugged it out for 30 years. You know, I mean, he was given the business, but he worked to maintain it, and he managed that Lucky Strike account and others very well. You know, he's good at what he does. So I think he could do a number of things.
Are we going to see some friction in the coming season now that he doesn't have that Lucky Strike account anymore?
Well, there's always, yeah. I mean, there's always friction, and it's certainly complicated because of that power position that he had, being the holder of the Golden Goose, is mm-hmm. changed. And Pete Campbell is on the rise, and they need to bring in accounts, and times are changing and getting more youth oriented, and you know, so yeah, he's in a precarious position when the whole thing kicks off.
Is that a big theme, the whole youth versus age and experience this season?
I don't know if it's a whole theme. I mean, I wouldn't call it a sort of obvious theme, but it is. You know, getting ever closer to the part of the 60s, everybody wants, you know, everybody associates with the late 60s, which is the cultural revolution, the sexual revolution, and people experimenting with drugs and all that stuff, which was about being young and free and the generation gap and everything, and Roger's on the you know,
it's too late for
the wrong end of the generation gap. Yeah, so. But it is never too late for anybody to change, especially on this show. You know, just again, when you think you have these characters pegged, they act in an unpredictable way. I think that's what makes it so interesting. And again, the 60s, you know, everything is changing around them, and it's interesting to see who changes and who goes with it and who resists it.
We love seeing Roger and Joan together. We got to see them a little bit last season. What do you think makes the chemistry so good between those two characters?
I think they're two people who probably see the world more similarly than not, which is surprising given where they've come from. Opposite ends of the economic spectrum, probably, and yet there's a certain simple pragmatism to the way they view the world. You know, they see events unfold and go, well, this is what this is about. There's a kind of a common sense quality to the two of them, I think, which sort of furthers the mystery of why they can't ever end up together. But I think if you did that dramatically, that would kind of close off a whole avenue of creative opportunity. So
they need to be apart to have that tension.
Yeah, you know, once you put those two characters together, then where do you go?
Yeah.
But I think they have similar worldviews, probably.
Did you have any concerns during that long hiatus about the show and about how easy or hard it would be to get back into the character?
I really was never that concerned. I probably should have been in reading what I've read in retrospect, that the show wasn't going to come back. You know, apparently it was like the missiles of October. You know, who knew? But I always thought it would come back. I thought he wasn't, I don't think, I he wasn't finished. I mean, the story isn't finished. And it took a longer time than anyone would have liked, but I was confident that we'd come back and finish the story.
And were you confident it'd be easy to get back into that?
Oh, yeah. It takes a little bit. It takes a little bit of time to get used to it. I always seem to be working the first day, and it's a little nerve wracking trying to figure out how to get back into it. But that's what editing's for.
Are you directing this season?
Yeah, I directed the fifth episode. Where does it come on? The 15th of April? Yeah. Which was an amazing script.
Can you talk a bit about directing versus having
acting? Yeah. This is the third time I've directed the show. And the first time was nerve-wracking and stressful and kind of a blur, but a great experience. The second time, I had the expectations that you know, each one presents its own difficulties. You know, there's a ton of material to get shot in a very finite amount of time. But I think that, you know, like NFL quarterbacks talk about how the field slows down. It becomes less of a, I have to manage every single detail. You start to be able to economize a little bit and devote time to what needs devoting, you know, to what needs more time. So this experience this time was my favorite so far. I just love the script I got. You know, working with these actors too, it's there's not a hell of a lot of directing, really. I mean, it's you do figure out how to shoot the scene, but once the shot is set up, these actors are so attuned to what the demands of the scene are and what the expectations are. And they've done their homework too, so it's really a sort of an adjustment, a series of adjustments. You know, a little bit less. You know, we have one like this, so now let's try a take this way. And you know, you sort of try to bracket the general tone of the scene so that when you get into the editing room, you have choices. Keeping in mind that Matt, you know, you start to be able to anticipate what he's going to want too, and that's part of the job. That's part of TV directing. Is it's not, you know, you they give you the script, they tell you how they want it, you go shoot it, and then you cut it together, and then you give it back, and they finish it. So you can't be too proprietary about it because it's going to change. And it's just a great experience, you know. And I take what I can get out of it.
Fascinated. Paley Matthew was talking a little bit about this being the first season that you guys filmed, knowing that there's another season and another season coming after that. How did that kind of change the dynamic on set as you went through filming this season, if at all?
It's funny, you know, I don't think it changed the dynamic at all. I don't think we felt the insecurity of the flip side in other seasons. I mean, it seemed like we were doing well enough that unless we really, the thing just fell off a cliff numbers wise, that we'd be back for another one, or not. I mean, we all kind of have been aware since the beginning how lucky we are to have this thing. It doesn't, this is one of those lightning in a bottle situations that never happens. Mm-hmm. And we've all, most of us been, I mean, me a little longer because I'm older, but having been around, you know that those don't happen. You don't take anything for granted. And so if it goes a couple of more seasons, great. If it doesn't, then it's been a great experience and you go do something else.
Mm-hmm. Did you look at the other shows that didn't make it that were sort of inspired by Mad Men, like Pan Am and the Playboy Club, and go, they don't have what we have? Or did you even watch them?
I didn't really watch them too much, but I mean, unless you have some original, I'm not saying that those shows try to duplicate what Mad Men has, or maybe, you know, it could be, you know, there are shows that take place in the same time period that can be equally successful, I guess. But what Matthew has figured out here is he's known that he wanted to tell this story for a long time in this period of the 60s, and the people in it, and what each voice sounded like, and what happened to each of these people, something that he has a really clear idea of, at least season to season. So without that singular vision, there aren't a lot of shows that succeed the way this one has, you know, whether it's Aaron Sorkin or David Milch or Stephen Bochco, or, you know, guys like that that have David Chase, that have that sort of singular, that's what you need, I mean, because there are certainly a lot of people who want to tell you how it should be.
Do you think part of the reason the show has resonated is, while it's set in a different time period, obviously, the subject matter is very current? I mean,
it is, isn't it? I mean, it's the business and race relations and sexual politics and foreign policy, and, you know, all the stuff, yeah, is really resonant and an interesting prism to look through and see what's changed and hasn't and what hasn't. Yeah, I do, but I ultimately think that it isn't a show about advertising or the 60s. It's a show about these characters living in these times that, yes, there were these momentous historical moments, but it was still a Tuesday and someone had to pick up the kids and someone had to get the, you know, go to work and you know, fix their car and do whatever they had to do. I think that's what it's about.
Speaking of that, the wedding episode.
Yeah.
How did you guys prepare to try to represent that kind of momentous moment in American history? Were there discussions ahead of time?
No, I don't think there was an overall, say, you know, a mention of the moment, of the heaviness of the moment, but there was. There were discussions about the quality of the event, you know, the someone likening it to 9/11, things that you never think could never happen. I mean, there'd been political assassinations before, but I am, and you can't overemphasize the shock of something like that happening. I mean, FDR had died as and he was, you know, he has health issues and he was beloved, but this guy was a movie star, a rock star, all, you know, and the most powerful man in the world rolled into one, and I guess it's hard to sort of put an overall feeling on it, but really it's just another scene, you know, seeing someone watching it on TV, someone gets sad, someone else is trying to negotiate a wedding. The young girl is sad because her wedding day is dashed. I mean, she's sad that the president is dead, but, you know, her day is ruined. I mean, that's what I think is interesting, is that mm-hmm. there's this sort of umbrella of these political, these historical signposts, but under that umbrella, people are still looking for their day-to-day answers, you know, in their own lives.
Something about your speech at the wedding is, for me now, forever connected to the JFK assassination, like it or not. There's just something about how you're trying to like make the most of the night, and obviously you can't, no one's there, and I don't know, that'll just be a great moment for me in the series and in TV.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a great piece of writing where you know, and again, that's why I like this character so much. It's because, you know, you think he's one thing and he's you know, his own frustrations with his wife, and she's drinking too much, and she's in the kitchen watching the thing on TV, and then when he finally gets out there to talk to his friends and family about his daughter, he has the presence of mind to look at the room and realize where he is and what's happened, and just talk plainly, you know. And yeah, it's a beautiful moment, but there have been so many. I mean, he's just really found a way, and it's such an interesting angle on that. I mean, there were hundreds, thousands of weddings that day that, you know, or events that day that were ruined in one way or another.
Last season, Don had that whirlwind romance with Megan, his secretary. But Roger kind of did that already with Jane.
Mm.
Is Roger sort of already disenchanted with his relationship with Jane, and is that sort of a preview of what's come for Don?
There's a line in the show that Matt's already acknowledged, so I'm not giving anything away, but where someone says, you know what happiness is? It's the moment before you need more happiness. And it's really true, right? I mean, you know, you're happy with your situation. You get what you want, and then you're happy for how long? Until you want something else, or until it's time to move on. I mean, we're all sort of forward-looking. Time's only going one way. So, you know, disenchantment happens all the time. Yeah, I mean, his marriage to Jane isn't perfect. I don't think he thought it would be, but I think that they sort of, that the Roger and Don particularly register, I think they see each other's struggle, and I've been through that, you know, and caught hell for that, and was treated badly by Don for my behavior. And then when he decides that he's going to marry Megan, I'm like, you see, this is the way a person behaves. And he says, congratulations, and you have a drink like a person would. And it's fun. I mean, it's funny and it's moving that they, you know, the thing I like about the show is how it progresses. I mean, it's informed by everything that's come, and this season particularly is there's a I don't know, I've been trying to sort of put it in a word, there's a sort of like a taking stock element to this season, I think, where you're, there's a lot that's come, we've come a long distance. This business has been started, and then there's a chance this season to go, where is everybody? What's happening with everybody? And it's really for that, there's a sort of a echoes of the first season, you know, where we first meet these people. It's all like meeting them all over again.
The scene where Roger didn't want to deal with a Japanese businessman, I think, was so telling, and you could, like you said, in modern times, maybe sub them out for people from Afghanistan or
mm-hmm.
Iraq. And
mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that scene? And when you read the script, were you like, I understand it, or I get it, or did you have to kind of?
I got it, but
I think it's so foreign to.
Yeah. I got it, but I, you know, having never gone through an experience like that, I mean, I guess one of the things it made me think of was, you know, time goes by so fast, and there are various indicators of that. Like you see someone, and like I have a son who's 12, and every time I leave or come back, and it's corny, but you look at kids and you see how they grow so fast, and you go, my God, you were 4 years old when I turned, and then I turn around and you're 12, and that's how fast 15 years goes by, and it's 15 years. From the time that war ends to these guys walking in the room and sitting down to do business as though, and someone says, you know, it's get over it. You know, get over it. You killed all my best friends. That's the way Roger looks at it. You killed all my best friends. Right or wrong, that's how he sees it. And it's 15 years, the wound is very fresh. So for him, it's emotional. And he made a pledge to these people that one thing I'll never do is do business with that guy. Well, times do change, and everybody else gets over it, but I don't know. Like, what does he say? Why? Since when is forgiveness a better quality than loyalty? Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
That was awesome. That was John Slattery. I love that guy. You know what? I don't care. He should have gotten an Emmy nomination. I'm sticking by that. He was great this season. He was doing LSD. It was hilarious. But anyway, Mad Men comes back next year. Arrested Development comes back with John Slattery on it. And you guys got to check out both. So thanks for listening. I have to thank NPR West, Leo the Magic Man. You guys don't even know. Record Surplus LA. Go to recordsurplusla.com. And Adam Janis, you're awesome. Thanks for listening, everybody.